This is Terry Gibson. March 9th, 2001. Archetype as Initiation. A cinematic update on a classic Jungian theme.
The neurotic patients in the Berghoesli and the vibrations of universal religious myth and religious experience. And he got very interested early in thinking that the psyche somehow it's here to develop us or to move us from birth to death in a meaningful series of transitions or initiatory experiences. Probably the first place it got an overt writing in Jungian analysis about 33 years ago now, Joseph Henderson came out with a volume called Thresholds of Initiation, which was a classic, celebrating a lot of interest in Jungians between this inner psychic experience and what they noticed in indigenous cultures particularly. And so Jungian psychology has been interested in that for the whole time and certainly the last 33 years. But as I went back to literature, there's been curiously little overt conversation about that. Again, it's implied. You find it in indexes of a lot of the popular Jungian books. But to think about it as explicitly as Jung and Joseph Henderson thought about it, you don't see it as much. And so tonight I thought we'd use film as a way to revisit familiar ground, to look at the way that I think contemporary cinema is educating us. And I those of you who have taken these seminars before where I'm interested in film and psychology, I really do believe that cinema is the most powerful cathedral and synagogue and temple that we have in our culture right now. And that what all film is doing, whether it's pornographic or narrative or feature film or action or violent film, it's all about initiating us to where the soul is missing and trying to guide us in finding soul and redeeming soul and transforming soul in our own and our collective experience. That's a thesis I have, that every film, no matter how jaded the producer and the director and the moneyed forces are behind that film, it's all about creating guidance into initiatory experiences. I'm going to show some images tonight that I hope make that clear. But I want to start, not in film, but I want to start with the blues. And I just got a little piece I want to play for you. Robert Johnson, one of the classic blues artists from the Delta, the Mississippi Delta, one of the ones, the early ones that went up, got lured up to Chicago to first put his recordings on tape. Recorded this stuff back in the late 30s, early 40s, and then he died quite young under tragic circumstances. And then in the early 60s, somebody found this in a dusty corner of a recording studio and reissued the two-volume set of Robert Johnson's recordings. Didn't do much in the United States, but it landed on very fertile ground in Britain, where people like Keith Richards and Eric Burdon and Mick Jagger sat around and listened to it over and over again in Liverpool. They wanted to do the blues, a live Native American thing. And the whole revival in rock and roll and the British invasion back in the 60s was fueled by this two-volume Robert Johnson set. And there's a song on it. I don't want to tell you about it right now. I just want you to listen to it. This thing's just called Crossroads Blues. And I'll tell you a little story that goes behind it after you hear it. But I'd just like for us, since we're going to be talking about initiatory experience, I thought I'd like to take us about a mile south of the center intersection in Clarksville, Mississippi, under a full moon night, and I'd like to stand at the crossroads with you. And let's see what we hear. Thank you. another version of that, he adds this final verse, and I went to the crossroads, Mom, I looked east and west. Went to the crossroads, baby, I looked east and west. Lord, I don't have no sweet woman, a well babe in my distress. What are you hearing there? You recognize your experience in it? Yeah, very much so. It clearly is a hermetic space. We're going to talk about liminal space. We're going to talk about that space where there is no space and time as we understand it. The space that the shopping center at Northgate or South Center Mall is terrified of. The space that, that our whole culture wants to distract us from. The space, in fact, that we've all been recently reminded, I was just rereading a book's going to be kind of key. The Veil of the Mysteries, Linda Fiertz David's, about a 45-year-old volume, just superb. I was just riveted as I was rereading in preparation for today. Listen to this. From such a perspective, then, we start with the myth of the Titans and with their inherited guilt. The Titans were the children of Gaia, that is, of Earth, and they were also the first rulers over the Earth. Not till the next generation of gods do the Olympians arise. They conquer the Titans in a long, terrible fight, making them prisoners under the mountains which they heap over them. But there the Titans remain alive, making themselves felt in the heavy rumbling of earthquakes and the eruption of volcanoes. As symbols, the Titans stand for primitive instinctuality and burning lust, which are masters of all earthbound creatures. The Olympians, however, who came into being later, embody various aspects of conscious spirit, which must conquer wild drives and even crush them while creating order, continuity, and the NASDAQ stock market. But the drives are not rooted out by this conscious spirit. Just as the Titans make the earthquake and cause fire eruptions from their poisons, so too again, under the reign of the spirit that has become conscious, instinctuality which has been forcibly tamed can break out fiery and explosive. And there ain't a person in this room that didn't face their mortality during the last week. There's not one of us. I work in an old bell tower. That sucker was moving about 3 or 4 feet, and I was just ending an hour. I finally got myself and my patient under a table. And all the clinical thoughts, the first 20 seconds, I tell my colleagues, you know, what's appropriate here? you know, this kind of ethics, anything about an hurricane, all those crazy thoughts. But you know, life, death, and poverty, says, is the only safe place. And I'm looking down here and seeing my shirt going in and a ka-thunka, thunka, thunka, thunka. I'm scared I might die. You know, and in this kind of liminal space as I watch my tower, brick room go 3 or 4 feet in all directions. But that's that liminal space. That's that hermetic space. And last week we all, you know, you'll all remember where you were when Kennedy was shot, which was a liminal space. And when King was shot. And we'll remember when Seattle had a 6-8 earthquake. Most likely, if you, particularly in an old brick building like I'm. But it's the Titans are always breaking out. And old Robert Johnson here is creating hermetic space, which is what blues does. Ken Burns, if you missed it, the jazz thing was phenomenal. What an essay. Less about jazz than it was about race and about a culture's difficulty in creating liminal transformative space. And these talented jazz musicians who are helping us try to create liminal space. Liminal, hermetic, transformative, initiatory space for an uninitiated culture and uninitiated human being. And Robert Johnson's there at the crossroads, creating hermetic space. You know the story behind this song? Interesting story. The story is that Robert Johnson wanted to be the best blues player in the history of the world. And the story was that if you went to that crossroads, a mile south of Clarksville on a moonlight, and you went on the southwest corner, and you sat against the old elm tree, and you got your old guitar out, and you started playing on the old beater, and played your best licks near midnight, you'd feel a presence. And his presence would slip that guitar out of your hands and stick this shiny black thing in your hands. And it was the hottest guitar you've ever seen, and you'd play licks like you never knew before, and it would burn into your neural system. And it's the hottest blues, and it would be taken away, and your guitar would be returned, and you could play that same hot stuff on your guitar. And who did it in the story? Is this the devil? You make a deal with the devil, you're the hottest blues player alive until the eruption of your death comes, and in your mind, and we talk about surrendering contract. The rumor is Robert Johnson sold himself to the devil so he could be the hottest blues lick player on the face of the earth. And who is the devil? You think of that about as a hermetic space? Who's the devil? In our culture, who's the devil? The devil's a lot of things, but who is the devil? What's the devil close to in our culture? Jazz, blues, the body, the feminine, earth, anything alive. And if I had my choice between the Olympians and those Dionysian devil folks, that's who I'd want to get close to. Those are the people I'm missing in my life. Do I want to go with Mother Mary or do I want to go with Lilith? I'll pick Lilith on most nights. Do I want to go with Yahweh or the devil? I want to go with the devil. The devil knows something about Eros in this hermetic space, about a redemptive Eros. And all ancient initiations were about Apollo meeting Dionysus, and my Mother Mary meeting Lilith. It's about getting these opposites in our experience joined together, Kronos and Kairos. It's about creating a liminal space where we can find the soul. And our culture is desperate and hungry for finding the soul. And what does Robert Johnson tell us in the story about what you need to do to find the soul? What is the mood of this song, by the way? It's a classic poetic form, I think. What's the mood? Huh? It's dejection. It's a lamentation. It's a lamentation. All blues, really good blues, is lamentation. And what is lamentation? What are you doing when you lament? What are you doing? Huh? You pray. It's a spontaneous experience of the heart sorrow. It's a heart sorrow. And old Bobby, what's Bobby's sorrow? What's old Bob sorrowful about? He ain't got no woman. And what is the woman? What do you think the woman is? It's his soul. I'm sure he's alone. He's not a woman, but sure it's his anima. I mean, it's a soul. He's not connected. He's alone. He's abandoned. He's bereft. And what is the key thing in film over, and we're going to see a lot of this, over and over again, contemporary film celebrates our abandonment and bereftness. Over and over again. One of the films I was going to bring, I couldn't, because it's not on DVD yet. It's Pay It Forward. If you've not seen it, it's an extraordinary essay about our bereftness. It's called Pay It Forward. It's extraordinary. For those of you who are teachers, and I've got a long grudge, all docs and attorneys in my ideal worldview would be capped at $100,000, and we pay all teachers $100,000. We'd stop all this nonsense about differentiating leave. And teachers are, what happens in the classroom is as crucial as what happens in the operating room or the courtroom. All our debunk values in this culture about what we value and what we don't. But the first 10 minutes of that is the most exquisite kind of example of initiatory teaching that could happen in most classrooms 6, 7, 8 hours every day. We'd have a lot less Columbines in San Diego if that kind of teaching. But it's wonderful. There's just the teachers. The first day of school in middle school. Those of you ever been around middle schoolers. And the first day of anything. And the teachers writing stuff on the board. Class files in a little tentative, but they're getting whipped up. And all of a sudden he turns and he's fire-burned. He's all fire scarred. And he's learned to use this. The kids are fascinated by the burns. So they're studying, who is this monster? And meanwhile, he slips them a Mickey. For 10 minutes, he shifts their whole paradigm. He flips them on their back. He begins initiatory instruction to these kids. First 10 minutes of this film, it's the most extraordinary film. And he gives these kids a task that one of the kids takes seriously. And it's really a task to go out and find the soul and to bring it back into the classroom. And a funny thing is that class saves this young man, and in a funny way, the young man returns the favor by saving the teacher. And in this culture, we save each other. If there's any analyst in the world that doesn't know that he or she is saved by their patients, they're not. Just as they were saved by their analyst. It's paying it forward. But film is constant, and it's sorrow, it's grief, it's this lamentation for our bereftness and aloneness in the world. And what does old Bob say? What do you do with lamentation and bereftness? Where do you go? What's the first thing he does? Falls on your knees. You get into an attitude of supplication. You understand you're in liminal space. And the appropriate thing to do in a liminal space is not get inflated. It's to get reverent and prayerful. In the language of Linda Fierce David in the Veil of Mysteries, you must get modest. In the precincts of the gods, if you're not modest, you're gonna get hit by a thunderbolt. Modesty in the realms of the soul. A modest grief, in touch with your grief, pre-thing is, to get access to the shadow, you have to know your grief. And then you have to be in an attitude of modest supplication. And then you have to orient yourself in the earth. Notice, east, west, sun, rising, falling, you get earth connected. And you look for the feminine and the masculine. And you open your heart through your sorrow. and you stick out your thumb and hope somebody will come by and pick you up. Human or God, we all want to be picked up by somebody. When we were in that earthquake, if we were going to die, we didn't want to die alone. Those 70 seconds, boy, I thought about everybody I loved. I thought about everything that was valuable to me. Today, it was very touching. One of my colleagues in one of our pastoral psychology guilds had the courage. I got an ALS diagnosis 2 years ago. And he had the courage to sit for 4 hours and talk to us about what his experience is. He's got a sure death ticket, quicker than we're all dying. But he's got a sure death ticket. One of the things he was doing was sticking his thumb out and hoping we'd stop. It was very touching. We're all mortal. We're all going to die. We're all filled with sorrow. We're all abandoned. We're all in need of initiation. We're all in need of locating the soul. So, I'm hoping tonight, and tonight is just going to be extended into tomorrow. This just gets it started. Archetype initiation, introduction. We're going to have some amplifying, anchoring film clips with some model overview thrown in. So brief conclusions tonight, bibliography. We're going to flow right into it tomorrow. Tonight's session, I want to get an overview. I want us first, we're going to see a clip about where the soul is, where you go look for it. And then we're going to see a clip about how the soul is lost in our time. It's a wonderful film clip. I'm going to show a sequence of that film tonight, and I'm going to close tomorrow because there's three sequences in this film. There's initiatory failure, pre-separation. There's the liminal zone where this person tries the same experiment again and starts finding their soul. And then there's transformation. It's a wonderful film clip, but we're going to look at that. And we're going to close tonight. And then tomorrow, in the morning, we're going to talk about initiatory failure. Some really rough films about initiatory failure for men and women and what film is telling us about how badly we're screwing up and the pain of it. And in the afternoon tomorrow, I'm going to talk about initiatory success, initiatory completion, and images that I've seen in film that are teaching us that initiatory completion is possible, that we can still produce initiated people. And we know we're badly hurting culture that way. I'd mentioned half-tongue-in-cheek in the advertisement. What does this have to do with the impeachment proceeding? Well, it has everything to do. We knew that 2 years ago, we had the presidential phallus was sick. We knew the Grail King was ill. We know the Grail King is still ill. My sense is that election came so close as the psyche knows that we don't have anybody chosen in politics right now. It's extraordinary to me with all of that trouble with a failed presidential fallows that there was, finally we didn't think about electing a breast for a change. That was really interesting to me, how little feminine there was, how little overt commentary of Sophia there was in this last election. And I think the psyche is just going to keep grinding us to a halt, and NASDAQ's going to continue to tumble till we get this right. We're in an initiatory crisis in this culture. It's affecting our leadership. It's affecting our stock markets. It's affecting our soul. It's affecting our style of life in this culture because we're not an initiated people. And until we can start talking frankly about that and openly, we're going to be in trouble. Well, let's get an initial image about what the soul might be. First, find out what it is that we're looking for. Just a couple of poets to help us where we slide in the image. Nothing on that one. Where is it? Hello. Where's the little? Well, I'll have to read it to you. I thought it was here. This is Stanley Kunitz, local poet. In a murderous time, the heart breaks and breaks and lives by breaking. Stanley Kunitz. In a murderous time, the heart breaks and breaks and lives by breaking. Let you guess who this is. You probably think it's a revivalist preacher. Just let me read this first. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light and not our darkness that frightens us most. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You're a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. You were born to make manifest the glory of divinity within us. It is not just in some of us. It is in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we consciously give other people permission to do the same thing. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Hey, I do that was. Nancy Mandela. Huh? No, Nelson Mandela. Yeah. And then Jung. The living spirit grows and even outgrows its earlier forms of expression. It freely chooses the women who proclaim it and in whom it lives. The living spirit is eternally renewed and pursues its goal in manifold and inconceivable ways throughout the history of humankind. Measured against it, the names and forms which women have given it mean very little. They are only the changing leaves and blossoms on the stem of the eternal tree. So that is what we're looking for. And before we see an image of the pain of initiatory searching, I thought I'd like to give you an image of where the soul is. How many have ever seen this French film, Poinette? It's extraordinary. We're just going to show the beginning. I don't even need to tell you anything about this because you're going to see right from the beginning. You'll get everything you need to know from this. But this is the game we're stalking during the tonight and tomorrow. This is what we're in search of. And I think this lives in all of us, and it's our hunger for this and our fear that we've been abandoned from connection with it. And if we worked our high-tech magic well, it ought to show up on both these screens. Label side. Okay, let's see if that works.
Avec moi comme ça. What's your body experience right now? Before we talk about it, just want to know, how's your body feel?
Heavy.
Heavy. Anything else you notice in body feeling? Lightheaded. As you well know, when I do these things, I suggest, it's hard getting with this sound thing following me around, so I'm reading upside down, but go to film, I suggest, real simple, first of all, who is the ego narrator? Who's narrating me? Who is the camera speaking for in this vignette? Who's speaking? This tightness, this grief, this heaviness. Who's speaking? Who does the camera favor? Huh? Well, in one way, it is us. What is it in us? What is the narration in us? What's happened to us? Very good. Something's happened to us. What has happened to us? Loss. What has been lost? Mother. Has mother been lost in this culture? Absolutely. Mother's dead. She wasn't drunk. But the feminine a lot of times escapes us in this culture. Sophia or the deep feminine escapes us. And how do we feel about that? Well, we're sad and enraged, lost, confused. We're a father who loses boundaries for a while. We're all of those things. You can't help looking at this. You can't help remember how your parents used you to console them for their grief. It's happened to all of us in here. And all the ways that we use children to console our grief. I mean, we're human. It happens. It's everybody's lamentation. Ego's grief and sorrow that the great mother is dead. And the fear is she ain't going to come back. And that we are alone and bereft and abandoned in a pretty crappy world. Where we're banged up. We have to deny our bang. We're in a world where we're wounded. All of us have a brace on our arm or our leg. All of us have Lou Gehrig's disease in a greater or lesser degree. Where is the self or the soul? We got a narration of ego. Where is the voice of the missing soul? In the child, Ponet. What Jung would call the divine child. What all ancient literatures have talked about the divine child. Ponet. And what is Ponet for us? What extraordinary. I don't know where they found her and the gift of these directors that can work with these kids and get these, and how they get them to experience their own stuff and put it on camera like that. But what is Ponet doing for us? What does she do for us? Well, she is innocence and its loss all at one, isn't she? She's the little, dear, little, precious, pure little girl and little boy and everybody in this room. She's the pure childlike innocence in George W. Bush and Bill Clinton and us. And it's in all of us. It's in all of us. It's like a collapsed world. Her whole frame. She and her father were in an everyday world. We're going to talk about this. Well, see if I get that chart because this is going to come up a lot. She's in a Kronos world. Clock time. I've used this chart before, but it's going to be an initiatory experience. Before this thing happened, they lived in a clock time world. You know, Kronos, the great Greek god that ate all these kids because a prophetess said that one of his kids would someday grow up to be an adult and take over his throne. So he had the brilliant ideas all. It was the first great brilliant idea, the first patriarch, the first great male of conscious, literate patriarchy, I'll eat my children. So he just sits at Rhea's birth straps and eats his kids one at a time. Till Rhea gets a little tired of that and she and the handmaiden figure out a way to slip him a stone instead of Zeus. And Zeus has gotten out of the palace and raised in the wilds and comes in and eventually does his father in to fulfill the prophecy. Chronological time is always running out. You know, until that earthquake hit us the other day, we all thought we were racing for stuff. We were, you know, we thought there's nothing could stop that clock. We had obligations, the freeway was running, the businesses were going. I was in an hour doing the receipt, 150 minute an hour down, next February. You know, we were all caught in chronological time. And it's always running out. It's Apollonian time. It's connected to Logos. It's left brain time. It's a culture that always is inventing a new atomic clock that's more accurate than the last atomic clock. We're going to measure the last molecule so we know exactly what time it is. It's irrational time. It's productive and consumptive time. It's often cruel time, and it's ordinary secular time. That's where Ponet and her father and her mother, but it's a safe basket. We like that world. We know it.
There's a concept in art called Notan, where you have a positive space and a negative space, and each defines the other.
Uh-huh.
And I think that in the beginning of that film, they're living in a space which is perhaps a negative space, where the positive space, by seeing what they do, you're defining the positive space as missing.
It is that liminal space. It is the great mirroring of. In fact, where did you see the word mirror? Where did you see the word mirror? Mother's a magic mirror. And dad's a dad, chronological dad, still Kronos, but no, your mother's dead. No mother's mirroring us, Daddy.
She's on her imaginary mirror. It's okay. But mother dies and they're thrown. And it feels at first despicable. It feels like a god-awful, hellish descent into absolute nothing. Jacob Needleman, a friend and a comparative religionist, in one of his books he once said, the closest moment you ever come to God or the divine in this world is that first free moment of failure after you've had a divorce or lost a job or you've been told you have a fatal diagnosis. That's the closest you'll ever get to divinity. It's that first free fall moment and liminal time. Because chronological clock time's not working anymore. The other kind of time takes over, Kairos time. In Kairos time, they don't know it yet. Although, in a funny way, I'll tell you what Kairos is. There's all time in the world. It belongs to Dionysus and Eros. All of the great initiatory rites in the mystical West go back to Egypt and Greece, and they're always the descent rites into the dark earth. They're irrational. It's aesthetic, recreative time. It's often restorative time, not always, and it's often extraordinary sacred time. But on the front end, it feels awful because we don't plan it. But where did we get a sense that they were starting to slow time down, even in this little vignette? They are out of chronological time. They're thrown into this liminal, hermetic new space. And how do we notice they're starting to use time in a different way than probably that father and that daughter ever used time before to this moment? What's the first thing they do that lets you know that they're having to recognize a different kind of time? So what's happened? They go to nature. They stop the car. They stop the damn car. They get out of the damn car. He stops along the side of the road. And he and his daughter are standing there, and they're looking at nature. And we're going to see that over and over again in the films. There's some beautiful images we're going to see across the next 5 hours of nature coming to us through this liminal, hermetic time after we get over the shock and the terror of this time. We're terrified about that time. And yet it's so sweet, and it's so beautiful, and it's so precious. And we've known about it a long time, and we keep ignoring it. If you've not seen A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Rep now, it's an extraordinary production. And of course, A Midsummer Night's Dream, the two great solar plays, the plays I love best of the Shakespeare repertoire are Winter's Tale and A Midsummer Night's Tale. And they're liminal tales about the earth at different times, about creating this liminal space in the forest and in a statue. But they're about creating this liminal, and at first it's hellish until we get used to it. So where is the soul? One is Punet. I absolutely agree with that. She's an image of the soul in this thing. Where else do we see images of the soul? We've already mentioned it. Or nature of the earth. Where else do we see soul? Or the possibilities of mixing up some soul?
In ritual.
Very touching ritual. What does that remind you? Those of you who are Jung, you play Jungian Trivial Pursuit with your friends on Saturday night. What does that ritual remind you of in Jungiana? In Jungian Trivial Pursuit, what's that remind you of? A favorite story, Jung. He talks about it in his biography and he talks about these collected works. Where did you see Jung ever talk about spitting in palms? The Alangi, remember he went to Africa? And he notices people, and he says these crazy primitives, and he was touched by, they believed by spitting on their palms, they could raise the sun in the morning. Every morning in the east, they spit on their palms, and the sun came up. He saw that with the Alangi. It's a primordial ritual of greeting the earth. And what a wonderful ritual. What fantasies did you have about that ritual? It's a lovely little ritual. What do you associate to that? What was going on? It's very therapeutic, I thought. Huh?
Healing.
Healing. And what's healing about? Huh?
It's in the same category as slicing your palm and mixing blood.
It's something, it's prima materia, isn't it? You know, it's like the alchemists say, if you want to make soul, you want to find the philosopher's stone, you want to find the gold, you start with urine and crap and spit. And piss, that's where you start. Well, they got a lot of stuff to evacuate. What a wonderful thing. They're filled with shit right now. Death is a shitty thing. Let's spit some of this out. Spit. And if you spit, might happen if you're lucky enough? You get it all out of you, what might happen? Healing, and you won't die. The biggest thing is we won't die. Of course, when somebody dies, we're afraid we're going to die. We're afraid relationships are going to die. We're afraid, like old Bob Johnson, we're going to be alone and bereft forever in a cosmic. We're all afraid when we die. it's all been a lie and there's nothing there and we're going to be alone in a cosmic eternal emptiness and all the hell we experience in this world is going to be amplified forever. We're kind of John Paul Sartre's no exit. It's just going to go on forever and ever. So they developed this little ritual to try to evacuate this darkness and also seal, turn the spit into something sacred, a sacred bond and covenant. It's a very touching little ritual. He suggests this. And he leans on his daughter a little bit. He's desperate. He says, "I want you to tell me you won't die." And he says, "Shit, I want you to tell me you won't die." And then she returns the favor. She says, "I want to spit now." You know, very touching. Father bond. So I do think the soul is in the ritual. Where else is their soul? Planet, the earth, the ritual of spitting. The relationship, the bond, the promise to work at it and be with each other in a different way. That's one, that's a fourth place. And where's another place that there's ritual? Think Alaska or Altamira. Where do we get sacred image? Sacred protective totem image. He draws on her cast. He draws an animal for her, a dog. A little cerebus to protect her in this liminal space. We all need the instincts. All ancient rituals sacrificed rams and goats and animals. And if you ever been to Alaska or Altamira, the walls are filled with the animals that they hunted, and they're seen as divine beings. They're seen as something both to feed them, but also carriers of divinity. And I think she had a little kind of protective thing. So here's Planet. Oh, dog spit?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. So it's kind of antibiotic. So I don't have to worry about it when dogs lick all over me and make a mess. I don't have to get too scared and too worried. What a wonderful idea. And it's that great oral satisfaction. I mean, she's terrified. We all need some kind of ritual. We need some kind of good manna and food. And what is the nature of the conflict between the ego and the soul here, and what central soul problem has to be resolved in a relationship? What does this film clearly say the soul problem here is to be solved? What is ego terrified of, and what gets in the way of its connecting to the soul, and what is the conflict? What needs to be resolved? What do you think this film... Huh? Death and their fear of death. What else do you think the film's going to work on? Huh? What's that?
Can he take over the mother's role?
That's right, for him to really... You get a feeling this guy's been, in Jungian language, quite a puer. He relied on his mother, probably, and his wife to bear the responsibility in the world. He's suddenly having to come up to bat. He's going to have to stop being a puer. He's going to have to ground himself in his middle life responsibilities to his daughter. So that's another thing. For soul to really be birthed between he and his daughter, she's really going to need him to be a reliable... And in our culture, the father is absent. And she's going to need him. He's going to need her. But he's going to have to step up to the bat. That's probably, we're going to see some initiatory activity on his part. What else do you expect you'll see in this film?
In the beginning, they're both defying death. She's going to stick her head out the window. He doesn't have to see seatbelt on her.
They're going to have to accept death. And clearly, there's some wonderful films about Planet's spontaneous rituals of accepting and moving and healing and grounding the death inside the earth. It's about this. It's a great film for you to go in if you've not seen it. And it leads to the great question, which we're going to see in the next film, which Cliff is going to talk about initiatory failure. Joseph Henderson, but why need there be an initiation at all? Perhaps it's because women know it but can't experience, or men know it but can't experience, whereas women experience it but cannot know it. Does that seem true to you all's experiences? Joseph Henderson, 33 years ago. I want to say that. Men know of it, but they can't experience it. And boy, isn't that true in our culture? I mean, look at the last political rounds. These men know there's something important at stake, but they can't experience it. Think of the presidential debates. There was no fire there. These men knew there was something at stake there, but they had their handlers tell them what. And rage. And what's the integrating emotion? grief, sadness, sorrow. And in our culture, terror and rage are addressed in initiatory events. They're filled with bull roars, and in psychotherapy, people come in often terrified. The first part of therapy, and their dreams are filled with either them being terrified or enraged, and having to learn how to. It's in this rite of transition that we learn to get comfortable with the grief and this feeling. Like Bob Johnson, we know when we're in hermetic space, the thing to do is not to be enraged anymore or terrified, but to fall on our knees and lament, and to open ourselves to the goddess of the night. And when we've learned to do that, it heals, and there's a rite of incorporation. How do we then, boy, when you've had those liminal experiences, how do you come back into ordinary time and hold on to it and also adjust to the culture around you? That's the problem of initiation. So recognize that you're winding down, the culture's winding down, to go do something about it, and then to bring it back and not lose it and get used to the everyday. It's just amazing.
Are all three of those things just liminal?
No. Just the middle one.
It seems like when you have that separation experience, it could be...
Well, the rite of separation is getting you ready to kind of, you know, march out into the wilderness to experience. And there's some preliminal qualities to it. You're pretty anxious. In fact, last year, the Tom Hanks film about landing a D-Day. Saving Private Ryan. You saw the preliminary thing of those men in those boats. I don't know how many World War II veterans, your parents you've talked to, those guys never talked about that much. And boy, that film, boy, particularly those that were at Omaha Beach will tell you, boy, that's exactly the way it was coming in those LSDs. There was that pre-separation. When they hit that beach, talk about a liminal place. Talk about Dionysus and death and those bullets coming. That was an incredible experience of what happens in an inertia. Of course, that ritual was not framed by... initiatory masters. It was a mayhem. That's why those men were in stress all these years. You know, those men had post-traumatic stress disorders for 50 years. They were untreated. Because they were in that liminal realm. They had the pre-separation thing. They were thrown into the unconscious, but there were no ritual masters there, and they never had any right of reincorporation. That's what PTSD is. Those people have been living in the liminal realm, drinking it, overworking it for 50 years. You saw the straight story, David Lynch's thing about the guy that's dying. He's not dying. He's just old and he's wearing down. But he receives word that his brother, three states, dysfunctional family like all our families. They haven't talked in years. We don't know what the issue was between them. But his brother's dying, and immediately his heart opens and he can't see very well. And he's a pensioner on Social Security. But it's a true story. He decided to go visit his brother, so he takes his John Deere tractor across three states. It's a touching film. David Lynch is, and he drives across two states and his tractor breaks down. And since he's a tough World War II veteran who always pays his debts, he goes to these people, he has this little bit of money waiting for his next Social Security check and get the tractor fixed. Can he stay in the barn? He has enough money to do this. So he stays in the barn. He's the kind of guy that every time he made a long distance call, the exact amount of was left and changed by the side of the phone. I mean, he was just that kind of guy. And he makes friends with another old guy. The old guy comes by to his barn one day while he's waiting for his tractor part and says, let's go to get a beer. Yeah. Let's go get a beer at the local bar. Here's these two guys. World War II veterans staring straight at him. Screen up there. It's a bar, afternoon, small town, Iowa. Are you in the war?
Yeah.
And one guy said, pretty rough.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I was a platoon sergeant, and I was sent out beyond the lines, and I was told to shoot anybody. We were surrounded. The Battle of the Bulge never got our races that night, and we were terrified. And there was some movement, and I opened up, and the next day found out I killed three of my buddies in the dark. I started to weep. The other guy had a similar story. These two guys just drowned in grief. I saw that at Telluride. David Lynch had premiered it there. And the sobs in the room of men, not women in the room, men who had been caught in that liminal zone and had never had any rite of ritual reincorporation. They were having that rite that night with a David Lynch film. Those men were being brought back home through image. But yes, you can have it. And the pre-separation stuff is that, has that anxiety. But you know, in our culture, we're all in kind of preliminal anxiety most of the time. We carry it in our bodies. We're always freaked out, if you're really honest. We're freaked out most of the day. I mean, my pension going to survive? We're freaked out. Am I going to make enough money? Am I going to get sick? We're always freaked out. This is a freaked out culture. I was terrified driving from this seminar. I didn't think I was going to make it tonight. I ran into that Sonics thing. You get, first thing is freak out. What are you going to do? It's only I-5.
I hadn't even heard whether they've opened up 99 or not. I just heard they closed it. I'm in Tacoma. We get news a week or two later. I don't know whether it's opened up or not. So I started thinking, we're always freaking out in this culture. And that's preliminary. And then usually we accidentally stumble into these places and there's nobody around to help us out. So we have liminal experience, but we don't know what in the world to do. And we never get reincorporated. That's the trick, too, is to have it. And that's what ritual does. Psychotherapy, union analysis. If it works well, is these three stages go on in analysis. That's all analysis. It's as simple as that. And it's as complicated as that. People come in a world of hurt. Usually they've had a series of nightmares or their relationship's blown up and they're having a midlife crisis. They're facing, the abyss is open in a more conscious way. And in a world of hurt, we start paying attention to the dreams. And the dreams are full of rites of transition and liminal, to pre-separate, take them into that world in an orderly way, and then bring them back out again. And it's the psyche brings us both out. The analyst doesn't, unless they're dumb and arrogant and think they can do it. They don't. It's the psyche brings us out. But it's these three stages. Victor Turner, who went to Africa and developed this model further, just said the pre-structure state is there's an established identity, there's a firm sense of self. I knew who I am. That's the way our culture is. I'm a stockbroker or a house husband or a doctor. Whatever, we know who we are. I'm a student. Then there's this liminal anti-structure stage. It crosses a threshold. We're thrown off guard. There's confusion and chaos, cognitive and affective imbalances, rage and terror. The role and status confusions and all great rites that are carefully done, there's either they really clothe up a lot like in the Mason. Any of you ever saw Masonic rites? My dad used to put all this goofy stuff on when I was a kid. But they overclothed, but it was ritual stuff. Gee, I wish I'd known, been bright enough to ask him more about that when I was a kid. Or they get naked. I mean, those are these ritual incorporations. But your class and status change. And generally in that, either if you're in a culture that doesn't have much status symbol, inside the ritual space there are wizards and grandmasters and there are supplicants and there are all sorts, or there's great egalitarianism. If you're highly structured culture, this ritual is egalitarian. Where did we have an example of an egalitarian ritual that we don't know how to do very well anymore, but we had one that ran amok here in this community just a week ago of a liminal zone structure, an anti-structure structure. Mardi Gras. And in that thing, everybody's equal. Everybody gets drunk. It's like Fasnacht and Basel or Carnival. And in like New Orleans, we have a religious community that understands that. It stays much more in order. But in your secular community like ours, that egalitarian thing just becomes a riot. There's no control. There's no shape. But it's anti-structure. It doesn't make a lot more sense when you think about people there were there to find soul. That's what those people were. They were trying to get intoxicated. They were meeting Dionysus. They were meeting Bacchus. They came down. They didn't know that. But they were hoping something would touch them. And all that they got out was the terror and rage. They didn't get to the grief part. And that's what happens. That's because it wasn't structured. The idea is not a bad idea. But it's how do we bring it on. And in post-structure stage, a return feeling weller than well. Ever had a good analytic session? Ever had a good experience in the synagogue or the cathedral or the mosque? You ever met the divine forces? You come back feeling weller than well. Transform in the conscious, and after the transformational experience of mutual activation and regulation as well, I love this word, the cogwheeling of the generations. That it gets real clear what dad's supposed to do and what daughter's supposed to do. The confusion disappears, and it's organic. It's confused what a husband does and what a wife does, what a man does, what a woman does, what a grandmother does and what a granddaughter does. It gets real clear. The generations can cogwheel then and give their legacy to each other. This hermetic legacy of soul-making across time. Now, we're going to see an example. Now, I need to check with your body clocks. What I would suggest we do is watch this 20-minute segue and then take the break and come back and talk about it. Would that be okay? Because we're all set up for it. This is a stumper. I love this film. How many seen Run, Lola, Run? We're going to see Run, Lola, Run. We're going to see the first sequence. This film is it's an extraordinary blend of animation and image around the initiatory crisis of our times. There is a pre-structure state, which we're going to see this one. The same event happens, and then it happens liminally, and then there is a reconstitution state, which we'll see tomorrow afternoon. So it's kind of a hook for those of you that are wondering whether you'll come tomorrow. We'll show the last one tomorrow. Tonight we're going to show the pre-separation state. All you're missing before you're going to see this, the way it's set up, is that this is a late adolescent boy and girl, man and woman, She's talking to her boyfriend, and they've been involved in a minor drug deal. It's really awful. And he's kind of a doofus. He's a confused, a nice enough guy, but he's a confused patriarchal young man, like all young men in this culture, confused, and he acts kind of doofusy. And he loses the bag money on a subway to Obama. He leaves it there, and he gets nervous because he sees the police, and the bun says, oh, my gosh, this is a great guy. He stumbled in all this drop money. And then the guy, oh, my God, and he's got to get over to the local mob guys in Berlin. This is a German film. And they're going to rough him up, maybe even kill him if he doesn't come up with the money. So he's calling Lola and says, can you come up with 100 grand in 20 minutes? So she's in her apartment. And they're clearly, it's that stage of leaving home. It's that trying to initiate into young adulthood. She's at home in a German townhouse, and you'll see her mother in the middle floor, and we'll meet her father. It's just wonderful. But what we're seeing is the conversation, and she's finally decided that she's got to get a plan. And the first thing, she's got to run out into the world. She starts thinking, you'll see all this. She screams, she gets ideas, she'll go to her father, and maybe this will solve it. And then we'll see what happens in Run, Lola, Run. If I can get, I got to eject this one first. And it's dubbed, but this is the first time that a film's dubbed. I like it better than having to read subtitles because it just fits so nicely. The pace would have been put off. So let's see if it goes.
I'm over into the ocean, and I'm just, no more money. I've seen them do it. You can't do it. They're such a traitor.
Thank you. of the dark, yeah. I've never been afraid of the dark before. I've never even been afraid. About then I think of us. And then I think it will always keep going on like it is now. And that you wouldn't dare. And then I wonder, why am I doing this? How long can we go on like this? All the secrecy, all the lying and the sneaking around. Should I grow old and have more sleepless nights waiting for a man who won't stand by me?
Thank you.
you, daughter. I'm Lisa Hansen, board of directors. I interrupted, Bridget. It's all right. I was about to go.
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
Thank you. Where they used to
aren't you so sure?
I don't know. Because I am.
But I could be any other girl. Why not?
Because you're the best.
The best what?
The best girl.
Of any girl you know?
Yeah, sure.
How can you be sure?
Simple knowledge.
In your opinion.
Okay. In my opinion.
Missy.
What?
Opinions are lame.
Baby, you got nuts.
What if me and you had never got together?
Fine, what of it?
You'd be saying the same thing to another girl.
Oh, man, if you really don't want to hear me talk.
I don't want to hear anything. I just want to know the truth.
Okay. I feel that you're the best of the best.
You feel? What does that mean, you feel?
It's just... my heart.
It's a good choice, Manny. She's the girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you say, thanks a whole lot for the information. See you next time.
Yeah.
And you believe everything your heart says.
It doesn't say anything. And, feels a lot like... it feels right.
So, how does it feel right now?
It feels that someone's asking me pretty stupid questions.
Manny, you don't take me serious.
What's with you?
You're not thinking of leaving me.
Are you?
I don't know. It's possible I have to decide about us.
So basically, let's take a quick break, 10 minutes. What a... just go. Let Cronus, and please come back as quickly as we can, and remember your body experience, and we'll unpack. There was a lot in this. Please roll a run, but that's the little background if you want. It's out on both DVD and video. Great flick. Somebody asked me about Ponette, too. There's Jacques Doyon. The Straight Story. Great film. And David Lynch, I almost was going to bring Blue Velvet, which I think is one of the most extraordinary films about male initiation. But I had too many other good things. We're going to have to finish with our discussion tonight on this one. By the way, the film I was going to finish with tonight, we'll do tomorrow. But just so that some of you have seen it, Being John Malkovich, which is another extraordinary film about liminal space. But first of all, I just want to hear, what was your body experience in Run Lola Run?
I was completely out of breath because
wasn't that exceptional cutting and editing in that thing? I don't know if I've ever seen a film in a studio when you had that thing in Big Dolby going the whole time. It really got in the body space extraordinary. So yes, one of the things is we're out of breath. Did you notice any other kind of body experience? Tension. Clear tension. What was the tension? That was Cronus. Clearly Cronus was here, driven by time running out. I think the director's clearly saying that's our cultural crisis. Time is running out. This is us. Lola is us. So clearly there is this tension. What else was fueling the tension? Huh? Well, yes. Well, she said, clearly she's a siren. I love that. She's clearly, she's Daphne. She's on fire. She's just a wonderful image of the fire of the feminine passion in the streets.
I see it as emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of an hetaira. There's that kind of energy. She's on flame with anxiety. And what is the anxiety? It's an initiatory anxiety. It's not only time's running out for a boyfriend. What is the other issues the director's very clearly saying this was about? It's the anxiety in the family system, isn't it? It's incest issues. It's who is my real father and mother? What's my real destiny? Who am I? I mean, it's all of that. It's all the questions we come to the cinema. We don't want the cinema to open up for us. And here we are, run, Lola, run. She says, so there's angst. There's this. Any other elements to the tension that you felt? Clearly masculine, feminine stuff. It's about. Did you get a little bit of that? You think about Joseph Henderson. She had lots of experience, but she didn't know how to organize it. These are three things about. She's a deep connection with the problems to get conceptual frames around it, and you'll see that she gets increasingly clear. The third film, the solution she comes up with. She runs the sequence three times. Oh, that we had it so lucky. But she runs it three times. And the third solution is extraordinary. But she develops more paradigms. But she has a good heart. She has an instant, immediate, bodily, kinesthetic connection to her world and her experience.
Is there a sense that this director's experience comes out of the song, What Lola Wants, Lola Gets?
I hadn't thought about that, but... Well, I mean, it's a male director. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know the rest of the words? Yeah. So, any other? But I don't want to get away from body experience too. Before we get into, we're getting any other body experience. We talked about the tension. We talked about the kind of angst and the drivenness. Chronological. Any other things you felt in your body before we get into conceptually talking too much more? Any other body space stuff?
I had a hard time not being mad at her for being stupid
decision
to get involved
in the world. Yeah. Of course, that's the stupid decision we make all the time. But most of us, our initiatory crisis is because we've made stupid decisions out of a lack of body or heart wisdom about how to stay out of things, about what things develop. And we're all, I think the director's clearly saying we're all in that kind of place of making stupid decisions and suddenly we're on the run. But any other body, before we get into concept, any other stuff that was going on in your body? It was a good workout. We were out there running with her in a way. There's extraordinary athleticism about the thing. It really did get into. And any of you that do run, you do get that kind of, you hit that dopamine wall and you get into altered space. If you run long enough, you get into liminal space. The beta enkephalins and endorphins. And we almost got there in this thing. I mean, we were all running. I was sweating. I've seen this 4 or 5 times. I'm sweating with it again. But it really has a physicality about it. And the music getting... And it's trance dancing. Berlin and Tel Aviv are the two international capitals. These kids that trance dance in front of the Berlin Wall to this techno pop. And they get into altered liminal space. And a lot of this is techno music. It's shamanic almost. I think it has a shamanic beat. Or suddenly it's almost creating a ritual space for us, and we were almost dancers with it. But the physicality of it's so important. That's what I love about it so much. It's a journey, it's clearly we are tribal dancers with her in a funny way, and we are racing, time's running out. But if we dance hard enough and fast enough, we can change it. We can convert it. Although, what precursed it? She had a capacity to stop time. What did she do to stop time? It's extraordinary. You know about Shinoqua? She's a Native American. She's one of the totem goddesses in the Northwest among the Coast Salish. In my understanding, she's very much of a Medea figure that had her family taken from her, and she's in anguish in the woods. And if you're unconscious and you run into her, she's the one who's got this look. She's shrieking, and that shriek will kill those who are stupid and wander into her path. But there's almost a Shinoquan primitive, she feels like Hecate at that kind of level. She has this capacity to... And what shatters most of all, what did you know that in one of the images, clocks. clocks shatter. She stops this kind of toothed chronos. Well, let's talk about it. If this is an initiatory thing, how do we know it's an initiatory space almost immediately? What's the first thing? She shrieks, she stops time, she thinks. And of course, what's the first thing that comes up for her when she starts getting deep? What is she going through in her head? Huh? If she's going through ancestral images, dad, mom, grandma, boyfriend, living and dental, she's going through. We're always doing, we always turn to the ancestors. Native Americans know when we get jammed up and we know that we got to figure out how to get into Kairos time and Kronos ain't working anymore, we call on the ancestors. Cool, cool, cool. And which way did she start turning, by the way? Did you notice? Clockwise or counterclockwise? Counterclockwise. Acta contra naturum. Jung says, always against nature, the great alchemical task. She starts whirling like a dervish as she's thinking in her head. And it comes up. Dad, what's that all about? I think it's talking about what's happening inside her. It's that. Have you ever had that when you're spinning and you're thinking? I think they were trying to talk about the turmoil she's trying to organize in internal psychic space. And what is Dad? What is that all about? Why Dad? And why is that so accurate? In our culture, I believe. In fact, in my analytic practice, all of us have to solve a primary family incest problem. And generally, it's the cross-gendered parent. Every male has to figure out eventually how to kill his mother. And every woman has to figure out how to kill her father. Symbolically, but effectively, have to kill her influence and claim their own power. That's a primary initiatory task. We cannot survive in this culture. We both need that incest. Every young man needs to know that his mother finds him erotically attractive, and she mediates that in an appropriate way. And every young girl needs to know her father finds her as an appropriate erotic object, and he mediates that in an appropriate way. This father in Ponette's on his way. I think he's going to work out okay. Down. It's the discinsus. It's the descent. In the catabasis, the great Dionysian labyrinth where the rituals are portrayed of the underworld, where Persephone has to go meet Hades. She knows she has to descend into her body space. She has to get out of her head into her vaginal region. She has to explore the caves of her being. The solution is down there, and she has to solve the daddy problem down there. So we're going down the spiral staircase. And wonderfully done in animation to cue us that this is a journey from ordinary time to extraordinary time. And she passes the course. What's the first person she passes? Mother. And what do we think of mother? Is mother initiated? No, I'm a Sagittarius. Well, you're married too. You can see this woman's got all sorts of existential problems she's not opened up at all. She's living in absolute depressed denial. Lots of experience and no way to understand it in Henderson's way. Her daughter is jumping light years ahead of her. She goes past the mother's voice. Get me some of the story a little bit. Down she goes, and then what's the first thing she meets? The dog, the vicious, guarding, instinctual dogs of the underworld. Cerebus is growling. You've got to deal. If you're a Hopi Indian, you're a man or a woman going in this short cave, you're going to meet the rattlesnake. She's meeting Cerebus. She's got to deal with the instincts, and she's got to figure out something. What does she do? Hurdles over around the dog. She has to face it. She gets around it. And then we know, because the film's clearly telling us, if you think this is about real time, that I think the director's clearly saying, be mythologically alert, people, we are down in the catabasis. This is another world. And she bursts out of that apartment building. This ain't everyday Berlin. We're in a new realm. And what do we see in everyday Berlin? She's starting the journey, the initiatory journey. What do you remember? What's the soundtrack saying? You remember what was in that? So could you hear in the soundtrack the song? I wish I could be a forest. I wish I could be an animal. I wish I could be the hunter. It's primal, instinctual. It's the great primal hunt of Altamira. It's the hunter seeking the animal. It's the animal seeking the hunter. If you've ever been to Altamira or Alaska, the key image is a half man, half animal shaman, or half woman, half animal shaman. Those were initiatory caves. She's down in the forest in the primal. She's in Earth time. And the soundtrack's telling us it ain't Berlin. It's the primal forest. Tunnel imagery, and some of it's secular, almost sacred feeling. Looks like she's going down long asps and long tunnels. It's the catabasis. And what does she see there? What do you remember some of the images that flash up as she's in the great tunnel of transformation? Not extraordinary that the sacred Vestal Virgins of Persephone meet her and part for her path. It clearly, this is a sacred journey. This is not a secular activity. And the great feminine spirits of the unconscious are blessing Mary to watch over her, to be with her in this journey. And she also meets an unconscious. Her mother's not the only unconscious woman. What's another unconscious woman she meets? A woman who's probably been damaged by this culture is not initiated. You remember? Yeah. Slut, pig. And she's stealing a baby. Did you see that she has intuitive connections to all of these people? She sees the death of the bike, the drug death of the bike thief. What a great way, that still photographer. She has a capacity. She's a seer now. In her journey, she's numinously a medium to the world around her. She sees in a moment, simultaneously and sequentially, the whole life pattern of people she passes. He's a bike thief. He's also a petty drug dealer. He's going to die with needles in his arm. And my reading of those images of the woman was that she'd stolen somebody's baby. She was an uninitiated woman. She's a baby thief. She'd stolen innocence. She's a woman that's been damaged by patriarchy. And this woman, because she's in this altered state, she's in a ritual journey, she sees and intuits it. Have you ever had that? When you've had a death in your family, or when you've had a real crisis, your intuitive capacity at those moments of grief is absolutely extraordinary. The intuitiveness of us is 100. Sometimes you intuit things about people a year later you couldn't do. But when we're in these spaces, our being is opened up to so many sources of psychic information. And she runs down and the whole street, she has like 360-degree awareness as she's journeying in the shamanic. Anything else you remember in that journey that you saw?
I remember crossing the bridge over into East Berlin, but also I was noticing that the animals and then the slow motion and then the nuns and then those blind ladies. Everything stopped the pace.
Did you see the sacred crone twice? The blind woman that cares for the boyfriend, to think. She leaves his card with him. She's trying to call. She's praying. I think she's praying outside their booth for him. She's the crone. She's the crone Helen, grown up and matured. And where else did we see her? Are you all right, dear, on the streets? We met the crone several times. This woman is not alone in this journey. She's being watched.
I've seen this movie, but I thought when I saw the crone coming that time, are you all right? I thought it was coming towards her. She was like this beautiful woman who
then transformed. She's both the crone and the virgin. She's, well, you know, Tony Wolf, she's the Hetaira, the medium, Eve, and Mother Mary, and Sophia all at once. I think the sacred goddess is watching over her in this. She's not alone. When you're in those initiatory places, it's terrifying. Unlike Mardi Gras, where it was not contained, this is a contained journey. There are mentors that are watching out for her in a very touching kind of way. And she's crossed Berlin of all places. East and West, Logos and Eros, the Berlin Wall, Berlin, more like any other city of our time, maybe except for Jerusalem. These tensions, initiatory tensions of masculine and feminine and chaos and creation and good and evil, that town carries it. Many of you have been there. It's a manic city now. I was there 2 years ago. I stopped counting at 300 construction cranes just in the downtown area. It's just frenzied. But she's crossing, she's bridging things. She's going to get there in 20 minutes. What else did you notice? And she stops and waits. That man's distracted by her. And those are the hoods on the way to kill her boyfriend. By the way, that's who those thugs were that hit. Her journey stopping things. She's not even aware of her capacity, but she's so intuitively in tune that she did. What do you make of the ambulance and the sheet glass? Do you have any associations? I think that's just a wonderful. It's a wonderful. Do you have any associations to that? There's no right or wrong. What was your hit on that? And there is that anime, but they stop. And I think also it's the precious crystalline boundaries between worlds too, that you need to stop when you're in initiation. And you notice she stops her run at that stage. It's almost like she waits for the glass. The ambulance and her both stop for a while. Then she gets reoriented. There are places to stop, and it's red light, green light. Anyway, shadow the grass.
Yeah, the Hello.
I do too. I think the ambulance is Cronus and our culture's very weak idea about what healing is. And maybe not inappropriately. I mean, I don't think we'll know all the
political
things. Yeah. But Lola's intuitive to that. What about the thing with her father at the Deutsche Bank? What was encountered there? What was so richly important about all of that? What kind of new knowledge did she get in her head to add to her experience that she knew in her body? Why was it such an important initiatory? What was revealed to her in the inner chamber of the Deutsche Bank? Huh? And the betrayal of her father to her in her initiatory process. Her father couldn't. The father was not holding her.
Not simply, I don't trust you. You need the money. I got the money. Here's the money. Well, what's my life insurance worth? What's my life worth? Well, your life insurance is $1,000. Oh, by the way, I'm not your father. By the way, I'm
the narcissistic entitlement of our culture. How would you like to be Chelsea Clinton today? I think about living in a family of narcissistic entitlement. And most of us are caught in that. I mean, the father's not any better or worse than all of us, but he's betrayed the feminine in his life, both his wife, he's betrayed his daughter. We know he's betrayed his own anima. And we also know what does he desperately want out of that, that he's not going to find the way he thinks. He wants it, and he wants a baby. He does want many babies. We all want many. We want Ponet. We want the soul. But he's a man that's initiatorily failed. And I think Lola, she got enraged about it. She got terrified. And then she had a moment of grief. What was revealed to her was that her father had initiatorily failed. He was not going to be any source of wisdom or help in this crisis. She was going to have to find it. She was going to have to find the father inside. And she was going to have to find the mother inside. But even he doesn't have enough staying power. You know, he says, well, we all have bad days. Yeah, it's like, why don't you need a little bit more of it? But yet there was some compassion. I mean, in a little bit he was putting a make on her, but he also, he saw her in an inflated state. In fact, he named her in a state of initiatory inflation. What did he call her? Princess. She had to get out of being the princess. She had to be a suffering woman. And I think she had to be revealed to she saw the primal scene of her father's initiatory failure when she burst into him. And she had to learn to rely on her own wits. Anything else you noticed about that? Do we? We're at the end. I'll put up a finishing chart and let's... I'll just put this last up and then we'll do a closing quote. In initiation images and Run Lola Run, initiation is always at high noon or high midnight, the extremes of light and dark, masculine, feminine, good and evil, escaping the centrifugal gravity of our families of origin, a daunting, absolutely necessary task. We cannot initiate through borrowed parental energy or be dragged under by parental initiatory failure. We must connect to our own unique energy. We must trust and gamble on our own intuitions, feel the deeply creative and unique acta contra naturum of our special time and space of transformation, knowing with Lilith and Medea the very right moment to scream the cosmos into transformative silence, presence, and depth. It is a mass, a ritual of transformation. Initiation is worship, the most profound theater of souls, what we were seeing here was the catabasis. Initiation is the middle way of the transcendent function, the way of a composed healing and healed. The sacrificer is sacrifice of compassion and peace. We must steal our fate and destiny. We must hold up the bola in the right way. We have to steal our own fate and destiny. Edward Edinger says we have to steal consciousness. The gods won't give it to us voluntarily. We have to steal it from them. And we have to do it with modesty. And the bum is God, stupid. The bum in there was the... Did you see the bum with all the sacks that was scurrying around the corner? That one little, that was the guy that had the money. And all I want to say about that is the bum is God, stupid. Tomorrow, Being John Malkovich, American Beauty, War of the Roses, Winter People, and a closing poem from Hafiz, the famous Sufi poet. I thought this would be a good way, initiatory poem to go out into the night to listen to what's important, particularly with a great moon out there tonight. This is a great way to send us out. A wine bottle fell from a wagon and broke open in a field. That night, 100 beetles and all their cousins gathered and did some serious binge drinking. They even found some seed husks nearby and began to play like drums and whirl. This made God very happy. Then the night candle rose into the sky, and one drunk creature laying down his instrument said to his friend for no apparent reason, "What should we do about that moon?" Seems to Hafiz, most everyone has laid aside the music, tackling such profoundly useless questions. Initiated people go out and play tonight with the moon. You don't ask about it. You just enjoy and be. But Run Lola Run into the night. We'll finish the last sequence of that tomorrow. You've been a great, sorry, it'd be fun to go 24 hours in an initiatory binge on these images, but it's been fun spending the time. Quick, books. Whoops. I know we want to send you out. Can't find my, here it is. Incidentally, is there a sign up, Lucretia, if anybody wants these overheads? Can they, people send in things in mail? You and I talked a little bit about phone. I don't know if that's... Well, you know what I would be willing to do, if people would like some of these overheads, there's a lot of material. I'll need these three things. So if you want this, here's the address, 625 Commerce Street, Suite 400. And what you'll need, and any of these things are missing, I can't respond, but if you send me a return self-addressed full business envelope, full manila envelope, self-addressed and stamped, with $2.50 worth of stamps, and you have $2 to cover the Xeroxing fees internally, I will mail the main overhead documents that I've used to you. But it has to have those things. Address to me, care 65 Commerce, Tacoma, 98402, suite number 400. Terry Gibson. $2.50 of postage on the outside, and $2 made out to PTA, a check to PTA. I will send you all these materials. And this bibliography will be on here, but the key books that I've been talking about, Joseph Henderson's The Thresholds of Initiation, Walter Burkert, Ancient Mystery Cults, a lot of the material that I've been using is pulled from there. And I'll also have this tomorrow, but also a wonderful book, Christopher Vogler, The Writer's Journey, Mythic Structure for Writers. He's a head script writer in Los Angeles, the new Joseph Campbell. He's head of script projects for Disney Studios, and all script projects at Disney are run through a Joseph Campbell hero and heroine myth structure, and they don't make the films unless they pass his muster. And the book's about that matter. Christopher Vogler, V-O-G-L-E-R. So, thank you. I think we need to get out to the night, clear out. See you all tomorrow, 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock to 2:30. Great. Have a good evening.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.